And welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This, being the first Sunday of the month, is Living Proof. We're your hosts. I'm Diana Greer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Tonight, in honor of Mother's Day, we have our guest, Nina Ian, in studio, who is a mother, a daughter, an artist, a poet, a writer, an author, a healer, a doll maker, and a workshop facilitator. Wow, that was a mouthful. She will gift us with her wonderful storytelling and poetry, and her unique way of mothering and tending to the needs of people seeking movement towards spiritual growth. And we all need that. Welcome, Nina.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Nice to have you.
And as much as we want to talk to Nina and learn about her life, her very extraordinary, prolific life, first here's news and events by Outbeat member Greg Moralia.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, May 1st, 2011. A Fox News segment featuring anchorwoman Denali Keith, hate group leader Brian Fisher, and gay activist Ray Hill asked whether programs like Glee, which this week focused on bullying and acceptance, represent propaganda unfit for children. Fisher said, "What these television programs are doing is glamorizing homosexual behavior, glamorizing homosexual conduct." Hill responded at one point and said, "I don't care how hard you try to revive 1954, she ain't coming back." Last Tuesday's Glee episode was not focused exclusively on issues of sexual orientation. The show included a variety of differences that high school students often struggle with, including body image, physical disabilities, and mental disabilities. And the Associated Press reported this week that the Marine Corps is on its final stretch of training to prepare gays to openly serve in the military, ending a 17-year-old policy commonly known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The latest round of training material asks Marines to consider their reactions to a range of scenarios, including seeing a fellow member holding a banner promoting gay rights as he or she participates in a parade. Training for Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines began earlier this year and is expected to finish by summer's end. The repeal goes into effect 60 days after the President, Defense Secretary, and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff certify that lifting the ban won't hurt the military's ability to fight. The Marines expect to finish training by June 1st. And here locally, Kate Clinton is coming to Sandorfell and bringing her Glee Party with her. In a tour that she describes as part Glee and part Tea Party, she looks at the expectation in society that all problems can be solved in 1 hour minus commercial breaks with a few song and dance numbers thrown in. The performance will benefit Spectrum's advocacy programs for LGBT youth. Clinton is a wisecracking, politically minded comedian whose swift wit has been entertaining audiences for over 30 years. Her shows are a mix of news of the day, commentary, and observational humor covering religion, politics, and LGBT issues. Kate preaches way beyond the choir. Kate Clinton said, "People hear each other in the light moment. Sometimes after a show, I will be approached by a member of the audience who says, 'I'm a Republican, but I still laughed. Should I congratulate them?' We all have an opportunity to make a difference, but we need to realize that political action is sexy." The creation of community is part of what Spectrum is doing in San Rafael. Their programs include support groups for LGBTQ youth 14 to 19 years of age, gay-straight ally clubs, and a new collaborative project with a youth leadership institute to create positive high school environments for LGBT youth. Paul Pilecki, executive director for Spectrum, said, "We can provide support for kids who have been bullied in school. We can educate parents and guardians whose kids are gay. We can work with schools to be proactive about enforcing zero tolerance and anti-bullying policies, and we can advocate for legislation that will protect all students, regardless of real or perceived sexual orientation and gender identity. None of these activities can stand alone. We need all of it to make a difference, and we need many voices in order to be heard." The show happens Sunday, May 22nd at 1 p.m. at the Hoyt Theater at the Osher Marin Jewish Community Center, located at 200 North San Pedro Road in San Rafael. For tickets and information, call Spectrum at 415-471-1945. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, May 2nd, from 7 to 9 p.m., the LGBT Insight Meditation Group will meet in Santa Rosa. The group meets twice a month for an evening of meditation and discussion about Buddha's teaching. For information, call Tim Wickens at 573-9466. And also on Monday night from 7 to 8 p.m., the Parents of Transgender Youth Group meets at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. On Tuesday, May 3rd, from 6 to 7:30 p.m., the Trans Group will also meet at the Positive Images Center in Santa Rosa. On Wednesday, May 4th, from 1 to 3 p.m., Hospice by the Bay hosts My Life, My Choices, LGBT Planning Today for Future Healthcare Decisions. This free seminar happens at the Vintage House, 264 First Street East in Sonoma. Reservations are required, so call 526-5588. And also on Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m., the Marin County Women Seeking Women will gather at Jason's Restaurant, 300 Drake's Landing Road in Greenbrae. And finally, on Saturday, May 8th, from 5 to 9 p.m., the Russian River Sisters will host La Vespa Dolce, a celebration of the Vespa in film at the Rio Nido Roadhouse. There will be a $5 to $10 donation for this event that benefits the Russian River Sisters, grants, and scholarships, as well as Sonoma County Pride. And if you have an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our own website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Greyer.
And that is the news for this week. Thank you, Greg. This is Jeff Basham, Living Proof's engineer, with one more event. C-Tai Bistro is doing a fundraiser for Face-to-Face this Thursday, May 5th. Reservations are recommended. C-Tai Bistro is in Santa Rosa. The phone number is 528-8333. Proceeds from that benefit go to Face-to-Face. And now, back to Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Dreyer.
Thank you, Jeff. So, if you're just joining us, we're in studio with Nina Ian. We'll be talking about lots of things, but this is our special Mother's Day show. So, Nina, welcome again.
Thank you so much.
So, what we like to do first with our guests is to get the audience kind of familiar with you. So, why don't you just share a little bit about yourself, and so they can kind of get to know all the stuff that we know.
Well, I'd love to, and I want to thank you for this great opportunity. It's not often I get to honor my mother, and so this is wonderful, especially on May Day. I am the original illustrator of the book Our Bodies Ourselves. Some of your audience may be familiar with that. And
I hate to interrupt, but if people are not familiar with that, mm-hmm. could you just summarize what that book?
Oh, yes. It was a book that came out in the very early 70s, actually written during the late 60s and early 70s, that really revolutionized healthcare for women, because there were not very many books about women's health, reproductive health and sexual identity. There was a chapter in there called In America They Call Us Dykes. It was one of the first mainstream books that actually had lesbians writing about their lives and about their health. But it was also a book for all women, and I was the medical illustrator, so I got to do all of the, of course, the illustrations for it. And it was done by Simon & Schuster. Wow. It went mainstream from New England Free Press originally. And so that was a very exciting time and a very exciting thing to be doing and to be involved with, because there were hundreds of women involved with the book. So that was one thing that, you know, people may recognize. And since then, I've been an artist all my life. And I've been a teacher and a writer. And a while back, I had a strange experience with my art. And I found that I had a gift for a sort of intuitive process, which I'll talk about later, I guess. And so I've been doing a lot of healing work, and in the process have become a Reiki master. So I've gotten more into the art and the healing, as those are my two main modalities, art and healing. And they've taken off in all kinds of interesting ways.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about that later in the show for
Thank
sure.
You. Thank you. So one of the wonderful things that I'm so happy about is being here for this show in particular because my mom was very instrumental in forward thinking in terms of both feminism and the civil rights movement and the peace movement. And my family has a background. My father was in a printers union. My mother was in the teachers union, you know, union people. So today being May Day, it's just so, so wonderful to be able to bring that forth. And given what's going on in the world today, especially around the union movement. So, yeah, so that's, I'm really happy about being able to talk about her and meet your audience.
So what are some of your most memorable stories that you have regarding your mom?
Well, I think the most memorable, I have many memorable ones, but the most memorable one was that because she was an avid activist in terms of civil rights and always encouraged us, her entire family, to promote civil rights and to think about civil rights as an issue for not only ourselves but all the other people that we were in contact with and that we knew, and sort of give us a global perspective even as we were growing up. She was quite, although she came from a poor family, she was quite intellectual, and she was very well read and very interested in, she was a humanitarian, really. So one of the most memorable things was that she took me to see Martin Luther King in 1963 at the March on Washington, and I personally got to hear him give that wonderful speech.
And how old were you?
I was 14 or 15. I can't remember exactly, but it was...
Wow.
You know, just thrilling. And
where did you live during this?
We were in New York. We can't tell by my accent.
She was hinting around to that.
You can't tell by my accent. I am from New York, and I'm a transplant here in California. And so we lived in New York, and so we went to Washington on the train, and it was really thrilling. It was just thrilling. So I have written, recently I put together a number of poems that I've written over the years. Aside from writing prose, nonfiction, and fiction, I have also written some poems that I'm putting into a little chapbook. And I thought to honor my mother, and not just now, but to honor her through this book of poetry, I would name the book after the title of this poem about her. That experience. So it's called My Mother Took Me to See the King.
Wow. So will you please read it?
I'd love to. Thank you. Let me just see. Mother took me to see the king. At 2 in the morning, she woke me out of bed. Time to see history in the making, she said. With a whisper, a nudge, we were out in a flash, and soon on the train and off in a dash. I was young and excited to be going away with mother to be seeing the king on this day. Still dark and cool in the morning twilight, the humidity and heat grew with every new sight. Past buses upon buses, miles they did drive, seemed the whole world was to see the great one arrive. We got off the train in the blistering heat with thousands of other folks walking the street, chanting and singing and praising this day. Freedom's call would be heard. There was no other way. I was eager to see and hear freedom ring, to see the great city, but especially the king. The crowds were so massive, I could not see where they led, so I left mother with her friends and ran up ahead. Suddenly I came to an opening at the end where the crowd was no more. Some great stairs did descend. Up at the podium, the one we'd come to see and to hear, the man they called king, full of love, not of fear. Being young and wild, with passion and daring, I climbed up a statue for better seeing and hearing. I turned my head for a glance, you might say. What I saw remains etched in my heart to this day. The masses of people, heat notwithstanding, stood shoulder to shoulder, their freedom demanding. their cheers and their shouts as loud and clear as the blue sky above and the heavens could hear. The love and the power spread out like a wave, covering every inch from horizon to stage. The pools of blue water stood reflecting the sky, the only place people did not occupy. And then a voice rang out, so strong and so loud, as if heaven and earth had enchanted the crowd. The voice of the king, dreaming and inspiring, a path laid before us, our hearts yearning, desiring. He fed us and nurtured us with courage and grace, his passion contagious on every face. Like cool water flowing into parched land, we all stood together, each holding a hand. Then we sang and cried and hugged and cheered. We made promises to God that no matter how we feared, we'd overcome and stand up when it counted, fight injustice and racism, regardless how it mounted. He dreamed a dream the king did that day. It was history that would begin to pave the way. No one who heard him was ever the same. Not my mother nor I would forget that refrain. My mother took me to see the king in August of 63 when I was a teen. Now, years later, peace and justice still deem that we keep on marching and dreaming the dream.
Oh, my gosh. Beautiful. Oh, you really captured that moment. Wasn't that so touching? Thank you for that.
Thank you.
I'm just speechless, really.
A 14-year-old? You wrote that?
Yeah. Wow. Well, I wasn't 14 when I wrote it. I was 14 when I went.
Oh, yeah.
And
wow, it's beautiful.
But I just, you know, it's something that when I wrote it, I was back there, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it literally, I can close my eyes and still see it. Mm. That's the impact that it made on me. You know, and now we have been on many, many demonstrations over the years through the women's movement, through the gay rights movement, through so many. But it never, that vision never fades. Mm. That particular day never fades. And that particular speech never fades. And when I was teaching school in Brooklyn, New York, I taught middle school. I was put in charge of Martin Luther King Day when it became a holiday, mm-hmm. which I was very excited about. And so I took this experience and I worked with the kids and we put on this fabulous production for the school. And this was a inner city school that had never really had that kind of assembly before. And it was a multimedia show, and I taught the kids to sing all the songs of that period, you know, We Shall Overcome and all of that, which they had never heard. Mm. And it was just really wonderful. So I was just so happy that, you know, my mom passed that experience on to me, and I passed it on to all of these children, hundreds of them.
When
there
did
were
you
2,500
write?
Children in the school.
When did you write the poem that you just read?
I wrote it a few years ago. I had been writing poems, and it just came to me one night. And so this particular poetry book will be about 6 or 7 years of poems that I've written. And some of them are poems that took place, of things that took place years ago, and some of them are more current. So, yeah.
Now, is your mom still living?
No. My mom... what's interesting about my mom is that she was born on Lincoln's birthday, and she passed away on Bastille Day, which I thought was apropos. So she hasn't, let's see, when did she pass? It's about 20-something years, and she would be about 96 or 97 now. So, yeah, she was a wonderful person. And she was also later in life a school teacher and was very... very compassionate for all of her children that she taught.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious how your mom felt about your creativity and how she influenced you in that.
Well, it's interesting because my mom really was more interested in my art than the academic part of my life. Not that she wasn't interested in it, but I was not particularly a great student. So she focused on the art, And she always, what was interesting about it was that she thought it was magic. little did she know how magical it really was and how magical it really became. Mm-hmm. But when I would show her a picture that I had painted, she would look at it and at me as if I was from another planet. How did you do that? You know, she would say she couldn't figure out. Art was not something that came naturally to her, that type of creativity. She was much more herself a writer. She loved to write. She would write not so much poetry, but she'd write articles, and she'd write if people needed someone to write a newsletter, you know, she would be happy to write that sort of thing. She had originally been a secretary, and she had been so she had done a lot of writing as a secretary. So that's, you know, she really enjoyed the artistic part of my life.
I'm wondering if she had a clue, any clue, how much she impacted your life by taking you to go hear that speech. I asked you if she was still living because I wanted to know if she'd heard your poem.
Mm.
And quite clearly, she's not heard your poem.
Yes, no, she hasn't.
Do you think she was aware of the impact that she made on your life?
Well, oddly enough, I want to say this. And given who I am, I think it will make sense later down the road, perhaps to the audience, but I think now she does. I don't think at the time, while she was alive, that she quite got everything. You know, I think that there were some things that prevented her from really seeing that clearly. But I know when I became a school teacher, in New York City school system, they were so desperate for teachers that they just asked you what you liked to teach. They didn't care what your license was, you know. And so I went into a group interview, and she said, English or math? That was it. So when I told my mom English, she kind of thought, oh, my goodness, dear, you had so much trouble spelling.
Oh, wow. Well, with that, we're going to take a little music break. Michael Callen singing Mother, Mother. Enjoy.
Your one true miracle, that's what you always used to say. Oh, I think I'll miss you most of all. The hours are all against me now, heart by heart against the day. Mother, mother, keep me safe from harm. Come into my room tonight and hold me in your arms, for I am still your shining child, the one you know by name. Mother, mother. I dreamt you came into my room all in the light. Safe from harm, come into my room tonight and hold me in your arms, for I am still your shining child, the one you know by name. Mother, safe from harm, come into my room tonight and hold me in your arms, for I am still your shining child, the one you know by name. Mother,
me safe from harm. Come into my room tonight, hold me in your arms, for I am still your shining child, the one you know by name, Mother,
And that was Michael Callan singing Mother, Mother off his Legacy CD. If you just joined us, this is Diana and Sheridan, Dr. Diana and Sheridan, hosts of Living Proof. And we have a wonderful guest in studio tonight, Nina Ream. And we just want to say hello back to everybody and welcome you back. And
thank you.
We were talking a little bit about your own mom last segment, and we wanted to invite you to talk about yourself as a mom.
Okay. I became a mom a little later in life. Actually, I didn't know one could be a mom if one was a lesbian, so that took a little while to figure out. And so I did, and I figured it out. And I loved being a mom. And my child is grown now, and hopefully one day very soon I'll be a grandmom.
Oh.
But it was interesting, because in the time that I was raising my child, there weren't a whole lot of people around that were being moms that were in the lesbian community, and so it was a little rocky to figure everything out, kind of be in the forefront of that period. And I'm really, you know, I'm excited that people, now it's become almost commonplace. And so that's wonderful. And I feel like, you know, like a lot of things that I've done actually in my life without actually knowing that I was, you know, in the forefront of doing these things, you know, those periods of times that people are starting something new is always really difficult. And, you know, getting people used to the ideas, like, you know, in the school system and, you know, all the things you have to deal with as a mom, you know, to say, well, my life is a little different than yours. So that was, you know, challenging, I would say. But being a mom was great.
You mentioned that your mom was forward in her thinking also.
Yes, that's true. That's true. See a pattern there.
Yeah. Did your mom face obstacles, as you just described in your own life? Did she face obstacles like wanting to go hear the Dr. King speak?
Yeah.
I mean, did people give her grief about that?
No. What was interesting is my mom was really well-liked by all her friends, and my dad was really appreciated a lot of her, you know, interests. And not at all. I don't think that she received much pushback on any of that. Although, you know, that's my experience, and I don't really know beyond that. I mean, but she didn't really let people stand in her way anyway. And I guess I was sort of similar in that way, kind of a rebel.
Yeah. A rebel you are. And so it sounds like your mom supported you in becoming a mom? Or?
Not at first. I mean, that was like a little beyond both of my parents, you know. It was like, okay, you know, now we've dealt with this and we're not happy about it, but that's just nuts, you know, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they came around, my mom particularly first, and then later on my father. But initially they both had a little bit of a hard time with it because they felt that, you know, it would just be a hard life. And, you know, to a certain extent that was true. It was. You know, but still worth doing. So,
wow.
Yeah. My child, as a grown-up, says, I'm an unwilling revolutionary. So, but, and then at times says, oh, you're such a visionary. Mm. So, that's so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's
So how are you feeling about maybe almost being a grandmother? You mentioned that.
Well, I'm not almost. I'm praying. See.
Ah. You want to be a grandmother.
You want to be, yeah.
Right. And I've been my most recent partner has grandchildren, and a lot of my friends have grandchildren. And so I'm envious. Mm. But it'll be. If it's meant to be, it'll be. And I'm looking forward to that, to that event. My grandmother played a really important part in my life.
How so?
She lived with us till I was 14 when she passed away. And actually, I think I was a little younger when she passed away. It was before the civil rights period, so I was a little bit younger than that. And actually, I have one more poem, if you'd like me to read one about her.
Excellent.
And this is a good segue into the work that I do, because these are some of the experiences that I did have as a child. This one's called Flying with Angels. Off the roof I leaped and flew without stops, soaring like a bird out over treetops. The angels guided me, held me safe in their wings. Voices of softness were whispering things. It's okay now, they said, you need not despair. Grandmother is here now, she's as light as the air. I woke up on the rooftop, teetering at the edge. Grandmother was gone, and I had leaped from the ledge. Her death had enraged me, the cruelty, the guilt. No one spoke to me either, so my anguish just built. Abandoned and alone, they had cut off her hair. My parents grew silent. They didn't seem to care. Her long locks I'd braided night after night. Then we'd climb into bed and turn out the light. She'd tell me stories of when she was a girl, of her life and her dreams, and my mind it would swirl. We had been together since I had been born. Now she lay in a coffin, like an old bride adorned. I slept in her big bed that night all alone. The sun rose the next morning. I tried to lay prone. I reached for my blanket, but it was not at my feet. I opened my eyes, waking up, not complete. I squinted, then gasped as I looked at the ground. From the edge of the roof, I was barely earthbound. Then I'd been light as a feather. With angels I'd flew. Out over the treetops, my grandmother knew. The angels had guided me, held me safe in their wings. Voices of softness were whispering things. It's okay, they said gently. You need not despair. Grandmother is here now. She's as light as the air. So as a little girl, you know, a death that is unexplained, that doesn't, you know, in those days people didn't, or at least some families that didn't, talk about death in a way that helped a child to get over it, you know, or explained it. Or so this was part of my experience, was going through this whole period of her death, felt like alone. And I remember really clearly that, you know, I had a close relationship with her, as well as my mother and father, but I it was a special connection that I had, that I think a lot of children have with their grandmothers. So, you know, I really loved her, and so her death was traumatic, of course, you know, so this was something, a tribute to her. And also I've learned through my work, this poem came much more recently in my life, because I do a lot of work with people that have people that have passed over. And that's kind of...
Can you say more about that?
Yeah, so my work now is... so as I say, my art kind of evolved from... I did painting, I did sculpture, I did all sorts of things. And then one day I was in the process of tutoring. After school, teachers make such a great salary. So I tutored as a way to supplement that income. And a woman called me to her home to help her son with reading, which was kind of the specialty that I had. And when I got there, she had a small little sculpture. And when she showed me the sculpture, it was actually a my face. It was the portrait of me. Now, I had never met this woman, and she seemed to know an awful lot about me. So I figured that maybe she was like a little psychic or something, but I didn't really understand what was taking place. But she was very insistent that I change my art strictly into this modality that she had, which was this sculpting, that she sculpted little portraits of people. And I said, you know, I really have no interest in that. And she called them dolls, and I really had no interest in that. And I didn't tell her, you know, look, I'm a lesbian, and I just really, I don't, you know. And
I don't do dolls.
I don't do dolls, you know.
Just say it, yeah.
I just don't do dolls. So, I figured, you know, okay. So she's really, you know, pushing me. So I figured, okay, what harm could it do if I made little sculptures? So I went home, and I made little sculptures, and I was having fun. And the thing that was interesting about it was that I thought to myself, this is a great, fun little project for Christmas presents. This is what I'm thinking. These are Christmas presents. These are Hanukkah presents. These are going to make, I don't have to spend a lot of money. I can do this. So I'm making all of these things, and they're all coming out like my ancestors from, I had some ancestors from Mongolia, some ancestors from Eastern Europe. They're all coming out looking like these people from, you know, these places. And then one day I'm making this little image, this little doll, for lack of a better word, and it doesn't look like any of these others. And I'm thinking, well, who is this for? And I don't know. And it has blue eyes, and I said, well, I need blue fabric. It has to match. And I just thought of it. Anyway, I'm go out to the I shared a garbage area with my neighbor, and in the driveway was the cans, and I went to put the garbage out. I was going to the market and going to pick up my kid from school, and in the can was this beautiful velour blue robe, a little tattered at the edge. And I thought, oh, this is the fabric that I need. It's so great. And I ran back in the house, and I put it in the washing machine, and I'm like so thrilled. I go, I do my regular thing, and then in the evening, after the homework is done and the dinner and everything, I take this robe that's now clean, and I cut it, and I put it on this little figure, and I'm like so delighted. And then as I'm doing it, I'm thinking, well, you know, I should probably give it to this neighbor of mine. I don't know why I thought that, but I just thought it really reminded me of her somehow. Not so much the fabric, but the face, you know, sort of, okay, I should just give her this thing. So Christmas morning rolls around, and I think, well, I don't know her very well, but I'll give her this thing, you know. So I go over, and I knock on her door Christmas morning, and she opens the door, and she's sort of surprised to see me, and I have a package. She says, oh, she says, I didn't get you anything. And I said, oh, that's okay. That's all right. You don't have to get me anything. I said, I have this thing for you. And I'm thinking, oh, what if she doesn't like these little, what if she doesn't like dolls and figures and things? But then I see, you know, on the side in her foyer, she has all decorated for Christmas, these little figures. I figured, all right. So I give this to her, and she opens it up, and she's like, the expression on her face, she was just startled. She said, oh my God, this is so beautiful. What is it? I said, I don't know exactly. I said, she said, well, what do you call it? I had no idea what to call it. I said, I call it a healing doll. Now, where that came from, I don't know. It just popped out. She said, what do you mean? I said, I don't know. She said, I really need healing. I said, you do? She said, yes. She says, gee. And then all of a sudden, as she's talking about this thing, I think, oh my God, I just gave her something out of the garbage. And that she's going to know that this thing is out of the garbage, and that maybe it was hers, because who else would have put it there? And I'm like mortified. So I don't know how to quite say this to her. So I say, do you recognize the robe, you know, the little dress? She says, oh, and the tears start pouring down her face. And I thought, oh my God, I've done something terrible, and it's Christmas, and I made this woman cry. So I'm ready to run out. She says, no, you have no idea what you've done. I said, no, I don't, and I'm really sorry. She says, no. She says, don't be sorry. This is incredible. I said, what? She says, well, she said, my daughter gave me that robe when I was healing from transplant surgery that I almost didn't get, a kidney or something. And I healed in that robe, and it, you know, it was from my daughter. And, you know, she wanted her mom to live. And recently I had a boyfriend who absolutely turned livid when I would put this robe on, and he wanted me to wear something frilly and fancier and nicer and this and that, and so he made me throw it away. Mm. So I just looked at her. I said, well, you know, now you have it back. It's on a healing doll. And it doesn't sound like this guy's going to know. You know, not the most sensitive person in the world. So she was like so happy. So as I'm walking out, I'm thinking, oh my God, what just happened? You know, something really major just happened. Anyway, it turned out, and I said to myself, just in thinking, she threw away the wrong thing, I said to myself. 2 weeks later, I go back to, you know, say hello, just neighborly, and she's got a big black eye.
Oh.
Right? So it turned out that I was right. She threw away the wrong thing. But I was so startled by what took place that I couldn't help but keep my ears alert for other people who were in situations. So the next situation that I sort of ran into was a woman at the laundromat where I did my bedding, because my little laundry couldn't handle the bedding. And she saw me making the little hands and things, and she said, what are you doing? And I told her what I was doing, a little embarrassed. And she said, oh, you know, I'd love that. I'd love to have one of those. How much do you charge? I said, well, I don't actually. She said, oh, but I can't afford it. I said, well, you know, I don't have to charge you. And she said, no, I couldn't possibly let you make something for me without paying. But I have a lot of medical bills. So, of course, you know how dogs' ears go up. Like, well, so my ears popped up, and I thought, medical bills? She must be sick. So I said, well, what's wrong? She said, so I'm thinking she's going to say, oh, you know, I have to, you know, I have arthritis and I have to go. And she said, I have a brain tumor. And I thought, oh my God, that's not like a little thing. That's like a major thing. She says, but she whispers to me, she says, do you believe in psychics? And I'm thinking, oh, lady, don't get me started. She says, well, I went to one and he said it's not cancer. I said, well, that's really, really good. So, of course, I went right home and I made her a little figure, right? And I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm sitting there making this little figure, and all of a sudden, I hear this voice, and I'm thinking, oh, you should not be hearing anything. You should not be hearing voices, you know, because people who hear voices are, something's wrong with them. So, but I hear this voice, and it's like pining for somebody, a man. It's a little figure of an older woman, and she's English, and she has a little, she's telling me really what she wants. I want a teacup, and I want a little tea thing, and I want a little blanket, and I want, and as I'm preparing this little figure, I'm hearing all of these things about what she wants and who she is, and not in great detail, but enough that I can put this thing together as a figure, and that she's pining for somebody really strongly. What could this possibly be? And I finish the thing up, and I find out this woman's address, and I go bring her this thing. And she opens it up, and again, she starts crying. And I think, oh, my God, Irina, maybe I should just stop doing this because I keep making people cry. She says, oh, my God, she said, how did you do this? I said, I don't know. She said, this is my aunt so-and-so. I said, it's your aunt? She says, my great aunt. I said, your great aunt? She says, yes, and how did you know she wore pearls? And how did you know she wore pink and gray? And how did you know that she was from England and she wanted tea? And how did... And she went on and on. I thought, oh, my God. So I'm about to leave. She was so happy after she, you know, realized that this was really her. She was so happy. And so I'm about to leave. And, of course, the curiosity got the best of me. And I really needed to know what the pining was about. So I try to figure out a way to say it. I said, was your great aunt married? She said, oh, yes, married to Papa, of course, the minister, the local minister. And I'm thinking, oh, that's not it. This was a hot affair that she was pining for. This is not a local minister. So I said, well, that's very interesting, but that can't be it. I'm saying that out loud. It can't be it. And she's like looking at me like, what can't be it? Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm sorry. I just had this sort of feeling that maybe there was somebody that... And again, she like turns purple. And she says, how could you possibly know about that?
<Uh-oh>.
And it's like, I don't know about it. I don't know anything. I said, I have to go now. I don't know. I don't know anything. I just had a feeling of something, a pining for somebody, a young person. She said, only my sister and I know about that, and my sister's dead.
Oh.
I said, oh. I said, I'm really sorry. She says, you can't possibly know about it. And she's very upset now. She's really upset. And she's, like, hostile almost, you know, like. Then she calms down, and she has some tea, and she says, okay. She says, I'll tell you the story. So she tells me this whole story about how this aunt had emigrated from England and had with her family, and they expected her to marry, and she had this affair with this young poet, and he carried on these letters and things with her, and then just disappeared after a certain amount of time, and she was totally in love with him, but it was kind of in a clandestine thing. And so she just pined and pined and pined for him until the local minister, you know, was, the family was sort of pushing her. It was, you know, time for her to get married, and that was the proper thing to do. And he courted her and asked her, and so she married him. And her sister, whose kids these were, passed away. And so she took these kids. The kids found the letters from this affair, this poet, whoever he was, in the attic, and swore them to secrecy, and told them that their minister father, who thought, of course, that she was pure, would die if they said anything. And so the aunt went to her grave, the papa went to his grave, and the sister went to her grave. And she was the remaining person who knew this. And here comes this woman who does her laundry. So I really thought to myself, well, something has really happened here, and that this was sort of a defining moment for me to try to figure out what it was that was happening to me and what it was that I had been hooked into through this process. But it was all through love. You know, it wasn't people often say, oh, voodoo and all this, which I have something to say about that later down the road, but maybe if we have time. But it was all coming from a place of healing and a place of love and a place of caring. So it was very, it was a wonderful experience.
Wow.
We
have a song that we want to play, and it seems very appropriate because it's called This Is to Mother You, and it's about when you don't have your own mom to nurture you. And it seems like you gave something to these women that touched them so deeply. I think it's just the perfect song. We'd like to take a little break right now and play it and come back in a
that
minute.
Sounds great.
This is to mother you, to comfort you. Give you tenderness.
Welcome back. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we've been listening to Nina Ian and her beautiful stories. And so, Nina, I know that you're going to have a workshop coming up, and I think that you need to let people know about this, you know?
Yeah. What I did was, after I've been doing this now for 18 years, I've been doing healings, and I do it through the creative element of doll making, was what I call it, even though it's soul dolls, spirit dolls, think of that. And it comes again from love, and so it's a wonderful modality, and it really brings people into a higher consciousness, a higher level of channeling and understanding, not only themselves but their abilities. And so I pass on what I have learned over the years to people, and I can do that very, very much without any, you don't need any experience. So I teach these workshops. I've taught them around the country. I've been teaching at the International Women's Writing Guild Summer Conference that's held on the East Coast for 13 years, and I teach other private workshops. We're going to have one in Guerneville, and it's going to be on Women's Weekend, which is coming up May 2021 and 22, I think it is. It's being held, a small workshop at a private home right on the river. It's beautiful, beautiful location. So if you're interested, my website is www.dollsforthesoul, like the chicken soup books, dollsforthesoul.net. And you can find out about the workshop there. And I also, one of the wonderful things about being part of an international women's writing community is that people did encourage me to write some of these stories, and there are hundreds of them. So I didn't write hundreds, but I did write some, and they're in a book called Artist as Healer, Stories of Transformation and Healing, that you can find on my website as well. And many, many years ago, I read a book by Jane Roberts called The Education of Oversoul 7. It's a wonderful book.
Say that again?
The Education of Oversoul 7. It's a wonderful book about reincarnation. And because I deal with so many spiritual elements of people who have passed over and are coming back in the form to give messages to the people who are my clients, I have written a novel recently that I'm hoping to get published very, very soon. And the name of it is Bleed Through. And it is about that connection with the energies that pass over and the energies we bring forth in our own lives through reincarnation. But it is a novel, and it's a lot of, it's kind of a mystery, and it's kind of a lot of fun, and whereas the other book, Artist as Healer, is nonfiction. It really is the case histories and the stories. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of fun to read. And I hope people will look it up, because I will do workshops just about anywhere. I've done them all over the country. So if anyone's interested, come to the one in Guerneville, or just get in touch with me. I do a lot of custom work, yeah.
Uh-huh. So what are you saying? They can call you and recreate?
Oh, sure.
Create a workshop at their homes or something like that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I do workshops anywhere people have a group of people, or if they want to hook into another group that's forming. You know, I do a lot of custom work. People call me for healings all the time. And they ask, I have a friend, or I need a healing. Could you do a healing for me? And I create an actual physical manifestation of the healing, so that it's a portrait of somebody they know. About 95% of the time, it's someone they know. I don't work from pictures. I don't know anything about them or the people they're interested in sending the healing to, including themselves. And it's been pretty great. And people receive a wonderful healing message that comes along with that. Mm. So it's pretty weird and pretty terrific.
So when you, I know we have to go in a minute, but a couple minutes actually. When you had these experiences and these two different women, and they kept saying, "What is this?" And you kept saying, "I don't know, I don't know." So you've had 18 years to to kind of figure it out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have a lot of theories about it. You know, I can't say definitively, but I do think it is coming from a very loving, divine place. It's a very spiritual experience. I do often go into some sort of a, what we call a meditative state, but it's really a trance state, in which I receive whatever it is I need to receive for the healing of the person for whom it is intended. And some of the stories are just unbelievable. I am so flawed to this day by what transpires.
Will you please give that email, I mean your website once
more? Oh, it's www.dollsforthesoul.net. Thank you.
We want to thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you for this opportunity.
Show.
This has been just wonderful, just wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Thank you for a great show.
Thank you.
Always.
Thank you. Thank
you. Listeners out there, if you are interested in being a guest on our show, please email us at goldengrayer@sonic.net. And we would love to hear from you. You can talk to us about anything that's on your mind. We love to talk about relationships. We want to thank you for joining us.
Real quick, before you guys end your show, it is your Mother's Day show, so I have something for you. And Sharon and I don't know about this. They're just opening up a gift here in the studio for the first time. So you want to read that, Cher?
Okay. Oh, it's
describe it for the audience.
Beautiful angel. Some people come into our lives and quickly go. Others stay a while, make footprints on our hearts, and we are never, ever the same.
And you guys have fostered so many kids over the years, and you have been basically adoptive moms for me through everything that I've gone through in the last 4 years. So that's for you and for your Mother's Day show. And thank you.
Oh, that's so touching, huh? We all got tears in our eyes. Thank you so much, Jeff. We sure didn't expect this. Thank you.
You're welcome. And do you want to go ahead and now go back to your script and end your show?
I don't know what to say. See you next month. We're going to have a great Pride show on the first Sunday of June. We will be recording live Pride. Be there.
Pride.
Yeah, hope to see you out there. Come be on the radio.
Please.
See you next month.
Good night. Good night.